Okay, boys, you ready for our next guest? All right, so you guys watch him on Victory Plus.
Thanks.
He is the Stars pre, in between periods, and post-game host. Come on up, guys, come on up. Let's give a big round of applause for Brian Ray. And we have one other open microphone, so that means that we can invite one of our other panelists up, whoever wants to do it. Okay. One of my first partners in crime. Spits and Suds is not what it is without this guy, famous for Shapshot's Elite Prospects. Does a YouTube channel, which I'd highly recommend subscribing to, with this man called Algorithmically Incorrect.
Got it.
Please welcome Sean Shapiro.
Thank you. So Lee is the closer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're saving Leah to shut it down
so
in the ninth.
Listen.
Okay.
So after Robert and I really messed up the microphones earlier today in the studio, we went to this so we can't touch them.
No, okay. we absolutely do.
We will find
what
a
happens
way.
When you put riders around electrical
We will
equipment.
Find a way to mess up the microphones.
How was your offseason, Mr. Ray?
You guys want some story time here?
Yeah, that's what they're here for. They're here for story time.
Everything ended okay. All right, so there's a good ending to the story. So how was my summer? Do you want to start with the kidney stones and the dog?
Yeah, let's
okay.
Go.
So we dealt with that. That was fun. All right. Then we came home, had some foundation work done on the house, found out there's a leak under the master bathroom. So, all right, that was cool. And then don't lose your air conditioning the first week of August.
Oh.
Totally died. So we were living in the Airbnb for 4 days. That was cool. But you know what? Everything turned out okay. Everything's fixed. The house is great. And the best part about all this is the water heater died 2 days ago.
Oh, shit.
So, but I'm having a great summer. How are you doing?
I'm doing...
How's everybody doing? Everybody having a great summer?
So first you're complaining that it wasn't cold enough in your house. Now you're complaining the water's not hot enough.
Yes.
It's a real Goldilocks situation you got going here.
Buy an older house for the character and the charm. Get a nice little craftsman with some history to it. No. Get a new build. Up to code. Safe. Modern. You're so glad you invited me.
Yeah, I know.
This is why I don't have a polo.
Listen, guys.
I'm bringing down the whole vibe.
This is freeform Brian Ray, right? We like this Brian Ray. We want this Brian Ray.
If Chevy was here right now, he'd be feeding me my lunch.
Okay, so I was thinking about that today because it's interesting when you have the player.
He likes to sleep in. That's why he's not here.
I dealt with that with Ludwig for a number of years where at times I thought Craig was going to take my head off. And my question is how often does that happen? You guys really do have great chemistry.
Oh, thank you. I've never worried that Chevy's going to take my head off. Like Chevy and I understood. He's the older brother. I'm the little brother. And I've said this to a couple people already. I will never out-chirp Chevy. Never. He's too fast. He's too quick. He's too good. I will never out-chirp him. But I am going down in a blaze of glory. Bon Jovi style. I'm going down like Tony Montana at the end of Scarface, even though I'm going to get out-chirped by Chevy.
Nice. Okay. All right. And my other simple question that probably no one cares about except me.
Right.
Do you keep the clothes that you wear on the broadcast?
Well, we're business casual. So, I haven't worn a suit for a season and a half.
What I'm saying is I really like that gear.
Yes.
And a lot of times I see you wearing something, and I say, we're about the same size, and maybe you could give me a couple.
Indochino in Knox Henderson. Kelly's the manager. You tell her Brian sent you.
Okay. That's like Hey of Stars gear?
I'm talking about the swag, like the white. Oh, I thought you were talking about the suits.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. That's like we get before the season we get like a little Stars swag bag for the on air people.
Yeah.
I'm texting Kelly right now.
Yes. It's hey, Tyler Sagan's bought a couple of suits from Indochino and Knox Henderson as well. So
Well, what I'm saying is how do we spread the love?
What's the referral code here, Brian? Need another referral code so you get your kickback.
I don't have a referral code. I'm not an influencer. B-Ray, I can't put the save 20% with my referral code on my Instagram account.
Okay.
You know, and then I get my 7-cent kickback or whatever that is if you purchase. No, just you know, but that's where I got the suits from. No, the swag comes from the stars.
Okay.
And yeah, they like those white pullovers.
Nice.
Those things are so cool.
Yeah, really.
Oh,
nice.
And they are so warm. Yeah, it's that was Stars gear.
Okay,
but I don't know if they're going to put them for sale in the merch side or not.
Okay,
that's above my pay grade.
All right, what is in your pay grade? Let's talk about this season. Your thoughts going into the season. Your keys on how this Stars team can make a run.
Look, they're up against the cap. We all know that. Losing Maverick Bork hurts your depth. This is, and Jim Neal has said this, feels like he says it every year. We're all on Robertson watch. That's going to be the number one storyline again entering the season is will Jason Robertson be here long term? Those two will have to figure it out, but I think we're going to learn a lot between January 1 and the NHL trade deadline. We're going to learn a lot about that situation. As for on the ice, because they're up against the cap, okay. Maybe the depth hurts a little bit. You have to replace the 20 goals from Maverick Bork, but you're also banking on if Nils Lundqvist is 10% better, if Thomas Harley is the Thomas Harley from 2 years ago and not last season, if Leon Bischel is 10% better, if Tyler Myers is 10% better just from a comfort factor being here, if Jake Ottinger is, say, 10% more consistent, if you can sprinkle that whole as greater than the sum of its parts internally, then you're right there once again. And also, if you're 100% healthier than what they were entering the playoffs last year, then we're having the same conversation of, okay, we'll see what Colorado does, we'll see what Dallas does, we'll see what Minnesota does. Somebody else is going to make noise in the Central this year. I don't know if it's Utah. I don't know if it's St. Louis. But there's going to be somebody else that I think makes a little bit more noise because every year it feels like this division gets a little bit tighter in terms of its competitiveness. But this is a year of internal growth. Oscar Beck, you know, from a bottom six checking forward perspective. Ritzkovian, same thing. If all those players can get 10% better, then I think you feel really good where this team is at. If that doesn't happen, combined with losing a player like Maverick Bork and maybe some of your depth, you know, getting dinged a bit, you know, Alex Petrovic is gone as a seventh D-man essentially, then you wonder what kind of grind this could be in the Central Division. That's kind of what hangs in the balance for me.
You know what I love about you, Spits and Suds listeners? Every time Colin Blackwell scores a goal, you guys tweet at me, and I absolutely love it. Because you didn't mention Colin Blackwell. That's my guy.
That's your guy?
That's my guy.
Yeah, but I always mention everybody loves a fourth line goal.
You do mention that.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Everybody loves a fourth line goal.
You do.
So I'm there with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You like them Harvard boys, huh?
I do. Okay. Yeah. I mean, he's a good guy. Plays hard. Scores big goals. Every time he's on, he's an energy guy.
Yeah.
Sean knows I'm an energy guy kind of guy.
A lot of energy.
Can
I put Brian on the spot?
What's that?
Can I put Brian on the spot?
Please do.
Where's Joel Kiviranta lineup in game one?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. First of all, he's got to play opening night for sure, just for the ovation alone.
I saw at least one Kiviranta jersey out here, so yes,
clearly. And also so Shippy can rip off that Finland radio call of his overtime yes. winner.
This is not live radio. You can say the word.
Yeah.
Oh, but you can also go with the full F word if you would like.
No.
You're allowed to.
This is a family restaurant.
I'm keeping it family. Listen, you're the dirtbag over there.
You want to? I see young ears.
I'm causing
there.
Trouble. I'm sorry.
I see. I've seen like multiple kids walking around. You're sitting here saying rip off F bombs.
Dad says it's okay. I see the thumbs up.
Oh yeah. He said it's fine. He hears it at home all the time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's probably on that fourth line.
You think so? I have him on the third.
Maybe the third.
I don't. I honestly think that's one of the questions that we have is depth scoring. Like, it's going to be, but at the same time, I mean, you're right. It's a salary cap year. Whereas next year it opens up.
I'm curious what you guys think, but the depth scoring being what it is, I've always had a greater concern feel like they've always missed Chris Tanev.
Yeah.
Now, you don't sign him to that contract that Toronto signed him to. They're regretting that right now. But ever since he's been gone, they've been trying to find a way to get that meatiness back into their top four, or that consistency back in their top four. And you hope, like, that's why I go back to Nils Lundqvist and having that 10% improvement. He finally got a fair, consistent chance to play, and he ran with it. Now can you build on it? Totally different player than Chris Tanev, but it's more than anything, just the consistency and impact from that second pair on the right side. I feel like every year Jim is trying to find a way to adjust that a little bit, whether it's Tanev, whether it's Cody Ceci, whether it's Tyler Myers, and the salary cap comes into play. You can't just willy-nilly go get whatever big-time contract you want. So he's been trying to work at it as manage it as easily or as efficiently, that's the word I'm looking for, as possible. That's the biggest thing for me is this group of six enough, or do you have to find a way to thicken up that second or third pair? And Leon Bischel can answer that question if he has 10% improvement.
That's a really interesting one, Leon Bischel. You would hope that in the next year or two he could become a second-line defenseman. But
that'd be, yeah.
It'd be ideal.
It certainly would.
I said I'm curious what everybody else thinks, and then I just sucked all the wind right out of the panel. TV guys, man.
What he said, right? Yeah.
TV guys, man.
He's the talent.
So you would say the top concerns would be left wing depth?
My top concern is always going to be that middle pair on the defense.
Okay.
Even left wing depth, absolutely.
But Harley and Lundqvist would be your...
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. If
you're back to another 15 goal season or whatever, or 10 to 15 goals from Thomas Harley, that's a great second wave to push out behind the Miro Lindell top pair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then whether it's a shutdown type role on that third pair with Bischel and Myers or whatever, but just it just felt like there was a lot of inconsistency. Tom Harley had a tough year. Not a bad year. He had a tough year.
Yeah.
I think he would tell you there were some inconsistencies in his season. If that consistency comes back, now he's looking like the Fort Asians guy that was running some stuff around. Your thoughts, Robert?
Well, you talked about how they're still missing Chris Tanev, and I think leading up to getting Chris Tanev, they've been looking for a Chris Tanev for a few years, too. I'm curious all of you guys, we're in Texas at one point, but why have the Stars not been able to consistently get that second pairing, especially a righty? Why have they not been able to find a Chris Tanev either before or since? What has been the issue with finding someone in that role over the last decade? I mean, Jim Knowles' basically entire tenure.
Get in there, Sean.
How many Chris Tanevs are there?
Yeah.
Last I checked, only one, unless you count Brandon Tanev.
Okay, but when you're looking at that mold of player, realistically speaking, you look around the league. Mm-hmm. If you were to say, hey, we need a Chris Tanev type, 25 teams are probably saying that right now.
And also, where do you pick up a Chris Tanev type? You pick him up in the draft.
Yes.
Where has Dallas been drafting recently, since they've been pushing for a cup? They've been giving away draft capital. You look at the guys who are playing in Cedar Park, and I'm going to check and see if Cross is still over there. But like a lot of those guys, it's not blue chip prospects on defense at the blue line. I like Luke Chris just fine, Trey Taylor, but they're not pushing to be a middle pairing guy right away. And you just haven't had that blue chip level guy in in Texas for a while. I mean, think about like a Esa Lindell might be the last guy who, Leon Bischel, Esa Lindell.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Bischel, but yeah.
Right,
yeah,
but like that's the last time that's really happened, and so you need a draft and develop strategy to develop a Chris Tanev, because you're going to overpay if you find him on the free agent market.
That's the other thing. They had Chris Tanev at $2.5 million.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Like, where do you find him at $2.5 million?
What a trade that was, too.
Yeah.
Two second rounders.
Great trade. And once again, if you're that player at that age and Toronto offers you that contract, I mean, go.
I hear taxes had something to do with it, too. I don't know. No one really wrote about it.
A little bit.
Yeah. Are we going too into the weeds? Like, are we talking about the third string quarterback in football if we mention Capo Bianco becoming instead of others?
If only we had someone here who knew something about Capo Bianco and had been watching him during his entire Stars tenure.
No, we don't.
At both levels.
We don't have any of that.
Yeah, if only.
Kyle Capo Bianco was also 29, I think.
He's not a long-term solution.
Yeah, so that's not a development situation anymore. It's So I was just looking over stuff because preseason games are coming up. But what is it? It's Bertucci?
Yeah,
Martino? Bertucci. Are those the two?
Well, Eric Martino's on forward.
No, he's a forward. That's right. All right. So yeah, is Bertucci kind of the guy? Because even Trey Taylor's a college kid, so he's probably 25
this
year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Luke Chris is also a college guy, so a little older, right? But Bertucci is a guy that they drafted, in a second rounder, I believe. And he's the best chance that they have to develop an in-house solution.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he did fine last year. He didn't light the world on fire, though.
Was that his first year in the American League last year?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. You couldn't tell. Like, there are certain guys you just see when you are there and you're looking, oh, I see something right there. I can tell. Like, Liam Bischel. Like, gosh, first night.
Well, it's hard to miss.
True. And it was hard to miss for the opposing forward. He crushed a guy in the corner in his first game, and I was like, oh, so that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously you guys are familiar from the game he plays up in Dallas. It's you know, he can do that, but he's found a way to harness it. Those things, like, you can tell that he has an opportunity to become a guy at this level, but they don't have as many of those.
Well, and the Bischel thing also goes back, and this is a player development path thing. It's one thing to do what Liam Bischel does in 15 minutes a night. There's a big element when you talk about player growth and moving things up, right? Everyone says, like, hey, this guy should play more. This should do this. Like, there are certain players that you can't feed 18, 19 minutes to, right? And I hope that, like, you look at the long-term projection for Liam Bischel, and you really hope that Bischel has that, where you're like, hey, you can ramp him up to a 18, 19-minute game. And can he still play his same game at 18, 19 minutes with the wear and tear? Because it's just like a, I don't know, it's equivalent to like an offensive alignment in football, right? Like, you're going to go, and when he's throwing 300-plus hits, he is also in those 300 car crashes himself as well. Mm-hmm. And it's the, and so it's, he's a fascinating case study as players get, like, you look at like Chara's career. If you go through and obviously Hall of Fame career and everything like that, you look at Chara's early career, ran around a little bit more, and then obviously became more of that stoic, menacing, carry big stick, speak softly type deal. And that's kind of where things go when you look at Bischel, and obviously it's easy to go to a Hall of Famer, but that's the example I'm going to use because that's the lesson and where things have to go with Bischel. I don't know, like, we don't know if he's going to be able to be that second pairing usage guy. I really hope he is because I think he's a really, I think there's a lot there, but that's one of the big kind of, I don't know if you can find that out this year. You can try and maybe push into that a little bit, but that's kind of a huge long-term question for the Stars, especially in a cap world where you're trying to figure all this out is Liam Bischel going to be in 2 or 3 years, is he going to be able to play 21 minutes in the way he plays, or are we going to get kind of Liam Bischel light? And I don't really, and then you kind of run into some problems.
Well, the encouraging thing to me about Bischel is thinking back to what, 2012, I think, when Jamie Oleksiak made his debut, and that's a player where he had the size, but didn't have a lot of that other crunching, the stuff, he wasn't using his size the same way Bischel can do very naturally. Well, I think the transition from being physical in that big frame to also being able to figure out how to play more minutes and scale up is a lot easier of a transition in theory than it is to teach a player like Oleksiak how to become a player who can use that frame, which he, you know, took a while for him to really learn how to do.
Yeah, he played a lot smaller than his body would have suggested, right? And just didn't become that player, you know, when he translated that level. And, you know, Brian and I saw this for years, and Sean as well, too. There's an element of this, too, where you talk about those quad A players, you know, those guys who are...
Yeah, 4A guys.
Yeah, they're guys who, you know, they light the world on fire in the AHL. And then when they're given the opportunity in the NHL, they're playing different types of minutes. And so it works the same way backwards, right?
It's like Capobianco, great example.
Capobianco, or Travis Morin, or someone like that. Yeah. Travis Morin isn't going to be 1PP, right? He's not that guy. In Dallas, but he was that guy in Texas, so that's a place he can really feast. If he gets 11, 12 minutes a night with the Dallas Stars on the fourth line, which your job is not to go out there and score goals, it's to not get scored on and get the heck off the ice, right? So it's a different sort of usage, and that means that your role changes, and the players that, like, you know, you guys are gonna have loved over the years seeing in Texas, and you see them light it up, and you see a point-per-game player, and you're like, why is that guy not clicking in Dallas? You got to think about the environment, around them. It's not just about them scoring goals. It's about who are their line mates? What deployment are they getting? How much usage? All of those things are the reasons why those skills don't translate. And you can think the opposite thing with Bischel too.
Yep.
Corey Snyder on NHL Network talked about top five goalies with the most to prove in this upcoming season, and he had Jake Oettinger as number one. I disagree with that, but...
Really?
I mean, I'm an Oettinger guy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I understand, but I know Jake needs to take an extra step, but I don't think he's the most to prove.
You want to go, Sean?
On the Stars, or what was the...
Just overall in the league.
Out of NHL goaltenders, he's got the most to prove this season?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's Bobrovsky in Toronto would be at the top of the list.
I disagree with that.
So I will defend this take on this. So here's where, and Robert and I did radio when we messed up microphones earlier, and I brought this up earlier.
Yeah, I breathed on the microphone and it moved. That's not my fault.
That, to be fair, those microphones were set up. It was a trick. I guarantee that. Everyone knows how publicly Jake's season ended, not this past season, but the year prior, right? With the public benching, led to Pete DeBoer's departure from the Stars. And then one of the most embarrassing things Jake has dealt with in his career, sitting there, Ray Ferraro was doing the broadcast right there and everything like that. A lot of times, the whole story coming out of that moment, I'm trying to speak louder because I know that someone said it's hard to hear, so I'm intentionally trying to amp it up a little bit here, so I hope that people can hear us. You respond with the season Jake had, which was not great by Jake's standards. He was just okay. There's a reason he didn't earn the playing time for Team USA at the Olympics. And so when you respond to that benching and that embarrassment with that season, that makes last season even more disappointing for me. Sometimes it's a human thing, right? Whether it's sports or anything like that, you go through a disappointing, embarrassing moment or whatever, and you think, hey, I'm going to dig out, and sometimes then you reverse correct, right? And you kind of hit that like high arc, right? And
especially when you were called out by your former coach before he gets fired. I mean, talk about having something to prove. Yeah.
And so like, Jake last season was supposed to be the most to prove, right? Like, hey, you got called out. You got benched.
Go prove Pete DeBoer wrong.
Go prove Pete DeBoer wrong. And now Jake went through this past season, and there's whispers, and I'm sure there's people have gone and said, you know what? Well, maybe Pete was right, right? And that's why, so when you talk about most to prove and everything like that, that's, I understand where that's coming from, because Jake has to make up for this past season, has to make up for the events of basically, whether that's not completely on him, but make up for the events of losing to Edmonton and how that all ended. And then on top of that, he is the one player, the one position where the Stars can't do anything else at any of those positions, right? Like, and we're going to talk about Jason Robertson at some point, but the reality is Jason Robertson, whether he is a long-term star or not, there will be money for another forward, right? Like, you can go and work on that spot and improve that spot on defense. We talked about going and trying to get a Chris Tanev. You can go and do that. The Stars have made their bed and basically bet on Jake Oettinger for the long term. And this is the play, and it's nothing Jim Neal can do about it. There's nothing you can really do to do that. So yeah, he has a ton to prove, because there's no safety net, right? There's no safety net. And after last season, when it was supposed to be, hey, I've got this chip on my shoulder, and it never really popped. I'd have to look through the whole league, like most to prove, obviously that's a, but if you're talking about Jake and the Stars and everything, I don't think it's crazy to say that.
Yeah, I think it's a fair take from Schneider. It's simple math for me. You have a lot of 30 plus win seasons. Just analytically speaking, I think you can see some peaks and valleys with save percentage and goals against average tied up with those 30 win seasons. And it's like, all right, which version is it? And then I think you can make a fair argument, and I'm a Jake Oettinger guy as well. I do believe he is a top 10 goaltender in the NHL.
Absolutely.
I do believe that. But it's the goaltending position. It's the only individual position in hockey that is the focal point. I do think he played a factor in beating Minnesota in six a couple of years ago, and he almost stole that game seven against Calgary. That goaltender defining...
How long ago was that?
Hold on.
Okay,
hold on.
We keep going back to that. Sorry.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Hey, I like
you
this.
Had your time.
Go ahead.
You
go ahead.
Had your time.
Go ahead.
This
go ahead.
Is good. Right. We need it. Drop the mitts. Hey, let's go.
Hold on. I will call Chevy right now. I cut his grass every Saturday. So there was that series against Minnesota. There was that game 7 almost stealing the series against Calgary. But besides that, have we had that sensational series stealing moment?
Okay.
That's what I was getting to.
Right, fine. We just don't have the same chemistry that you and Brent Severn have. We're still waiting.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of awesome chemistry.
So, if there's a little bit more of that, especially later in the playoffs, because that's the other thing. You're going through the grind. Your playoff run's getting longer. That backbone has to hold up. If you can get into a little bit more of that, then I think that's where the narrative starts to change around him. Now you're the money goaltender. You're the big-time goaltender. You're the guy that shows up. And he has showed up at times. You just want to see a little bit more of it if you're going to go from a top 10 to maybe a top 8 goaltender or a top 5 goaltender.
So, that was a great take. I love how you're bringing it
tonight. Before I was rudely interrupted.
I know.
That's all right.